Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all grapple with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth. What's on your mind?
I like grapple, by the way. That's okay. Working for me. We'll keep that in the rotation. I feel great today, which is wonderful. It's a beautiful day. It's kind of chilly, but it's as if I feel a little bit like a cloud has lifted. Because, you know, I've been coming in the last, I don't know, quite a while, feeling this heaviness of the world. But I have had this kind of shift of perspective, the shift of energy. It was the end of the quarter for me yesterday, my last finals with my students. And I just a lot of things kind of bubbled up, and I feel light and airy. And ready to tackle a subject that is anything but light and airy today.
Well, you had a Thanksgiving show that was dark, so now we can have a dark show that's light and airy.
Exactly. We'll take a very serious subject and hopefully be able to address it with some perspective maybe or a little distance. But yeah, it was interesting. So yesterday was my last day with my students. And, you know, your students can really make or break how you feel about going into work if you're a teacher. And this quarter, I had two classes with just phenomenal students. I just loved them. Such great hearts, and they're engaged in the material. And I think that really shifted my energy this whole quarter about what I was teaching. And at the end of so yesterday we didn't really have a formal final. I was just handing back papers to one of my classes, and we were done. I said, okay, well, you know, it's been a great quarter and you are free to go. And they all just sat there and looked at me and said, we don't want to leave yet. And I said, okay, well, we can just sit and hang out. And they had made me a gift, Hank. They brought in this beautiful flower pot and wrote on it love pot and wrote their names all on the outside of the pot, and then they filled it with love notes for me. It was the sweetest thing. And so we just all kind of sat there and appreciated the moment. And I said, okay, well, since no one wants to leave, I want to talk to you about the ideas I have for my show tomorrow and see what you think. And so we had an hour-long conversation about sexual harassment and sexual misconduct and how they view what's going on in the world right now from their perspective. And it was really enlightening, because a lot of what I've felt about what's happening feels like old-timer stories, you know, that it's the behavior of older white men from another era who don't know any better. And certainly our younger generation is not struggling with the same issues at the same degree that I did when I was their age, or that women have forever and ever. That certainly through the feminist movement and my generation raising our daughters to be more empowered and to speak their mind and to feel confident, that this wouldn't be an issue. And I was disheartened, because a lot of the girls in the class, the young women in the class, talked about their experiences of still feeling harassed or unsafe or being assaulted at, you know, alarming rates on campus. And a couple of the girls talked about being inherently kind of shy and more quiet, and they feel that makes them more of a target because they're not apt to speak up or say that they don't like what's happening. And then the young men in my class started speaking up, and that was even more, not crushing, but difficult to hear, because they're all heart-centered young men who care so deeply about other people, and they feel like they're lumped into this horrific behavior of all men, and that being a man at this time is difficult because they feel like they are either, you know, going to be vilified for their masculinity, or if they're just trying to be friendly and nice and kind, that they're overlooked and seen as just too soft or too weak, that for them, they feel like there's only two ways to go. So I left that conversation kind of rethinking the direction I wanted to go with today's show, because my initial thought was, let's talk about the bad behavior of this dying segment of our culture and, you know, see what we look like moving forward. But now I see things differently, and I've been avoiding kind of diving into this conversation about sexual misconduct or sexual harassment, because in all honesty, I have a lot of conflicted feelings about misconduct. I mean, I have no conflicted feelings about the horrific behaviors by men like Harvey Weinstein, or what Matt Lauer's been accused of doing, or, you know, Roger Ailes. Those are, you know, allegations, and many of them proved to be true. But those men had deeply troubling problems that spurred their behaviors besides their being in power. I'm not conflicted about that behavior being bad. What I'm conflicted about is that we lump all sexual misconduct or bad behaviors into this one category of anyone who has misbehaved then should be vilified and chucked out of society. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's that simple. I don't think it's black and white, because I think in some ways we all are complicit a bit in the sexual gamesmanship that happens in society. And if we're not willing to look at some of the sexual gamesmanship that happens between men and women, then we are continually going to find ourselves in trouble. Because when we overlook and kind of push to the side minor aggressions or minor misdeeds, then when something big happens, it feels so shocking. Like, how did this happen? It must just be an aberration. But the truth is, there's always gamesmanship happening between men and women and those in power and those out of power. And occasionally it erupts. So I want to try to have a conversation about some of that stuff that happens before it becomes Harvey Weinstein, before it becomes Louis C.K. I don't know if we're going to be able to do it, but I'm hoping we can.
Well, I really like what you said about it being on a fine line or on a spectrum, because there's obvious misdeeds, you know, like Harvey Weinstein, what he's accused of. But then there's others that say, well, he invited me up to his hotel room, and that's inappropriate. Well, I mean, there's people inviting people to hotel rooms in every convention in every city going on right now. So probably inappropriate, but not unheard of.
No.
Certainly. And I don't even know if it is inappropriate if you're just two coworkers that are enjoying a cocktail and it goes to a certain step.
But. And I think that's the conversation I want to try to have today, is how do we discern or deal with those kind of cloudy gray areas of sexual gamesmanship that happen? And can we address them? And can we shift the way we see them in society? And it was interesting. I don't know if you watch Saturday Night Live, but I do regularly. Makes me feel young and hip. But it was brought it all back to me this weekend because I watched the women of Saturday Night Live put together a music video addressing sexual misconduct and kind of the history of women's experiences being women in society. And it kind of brought it all together for me that this is a topic, this is a conversation that has been in the forefront of women's experiences for centuries. We have it, right? Let's listen to a little bit from Saturday Night Live, the women of Saturday Night Live singing about their experience with sexual harassment.
Hey there, boys. We know the last couple months have been frickin' insane. All these big, cool, powerful guys are turning out to be, what's the word? Habitual predators?
Cats out of the bag. Women get harassed all the time.
And it's like, dang, is this the world now?
But here's a little secret that every girl knows.
Oh, this been the damn world.
It's freaky, it's nasty, it's button under the desk mat, but this is our hometown, we'll show you around. Welcome to hell, now we're all in here. Look around, isn't it nice, it's a full nightmare. Ain't it so cuckoo, playing this guess who? Yeah, it's a lot, but it's what we got.
Oh, and this ain't a girl group. We just travel in a pack for safety.
This is how I walk home at night.
My dad gave me a pink gun, so there's a lot there.
My little trick? If someone's following me, I put my arm up like this, and I go, ah! Because then he'll be like, she's not worth the trouble.
Welcome to hell. Now you're...
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we're listening to a little bit from Saturday Night Live, a music video that the women put together about their experience in hell as women. And And so today I want to try to have a conversation about all of the many aspects that go into this social state that we are in currently, with a lot of allegations of sexual harassment, sexual misconduct on the level of abuse and assault, all the way down to claims of microaggressions and daily harassments and catcalls and those things that create an unhealthy and an unsafe work environment or social environment or campus environment, that we have a lot of messy history when it comes to the interplay between men and women and between those in power and those who are subordinate. I think there is that piece of power that goes into the story, but I think there are other things that drive the story that we have today. And one is social conditioning that limits our behaviors, the way that we interact with each other, the way that we're expected to interact. And I think that there's a piece of education, poor education, not teaching people the correct way to have healthy, intimate relationships. And when we don't address the power, the social conditioning, the sense of entitlement that permeates the privilege and our education, then we can't really address the overall sense of belonging or safety that people need to feel to feel competent in our culture. All right, so that's what's on my mind today. As always, you're going to be invited to be a part of this conversation, 805-781-3875. You can find out more about the program by visiting our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can subscribe to podcast the show by visiting Apple Podcasts or NPR One. Look for A Conversation with The Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe, leave a note if you like the show, help build our audience. And as always, we look forward to hearing from you. And as we move forward with the show today, I just want to say that I feel really anxious about this show. I feel anxious because I know I'm going to say some things that are going to activate you in ways that might make you feel uncomfortable or might make you feel angry or might make you feel a lot of different things. And I hope you'll call and talk to me about them. Or I hope you'll let me know how you're hearing what I'm saying, because I want to make sure, I hope that I can present my ideas and my thoughts in a coherent way. And I also want you to know that I don't have any answers. I don't have specific answers. I have some ideas of where we can go, but mostly I have a lot of mixed feelings. I feel a lot of complex emotions and feelings about this issue and how it impacts men and women and young women and young men. And so I look forward to coming back and taking your calls and having this conversation. Welcome to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our phone number is 805-781-3875. And today I want to try to broach the conversation about sexual misconduct. And I keep using the term sexual misconduct on purpose because I don't want to limit the conversation to this idea of sexual assault or sexual harassment or sexual misdeeds. Sexual misconduct is kind of an umbrella to cover all of those ways that we behave inappropriately sexually towards each other, whether it's women to men or men to women or women to women or men to men. If there's power imbalances involved, or if there's attraction involved, attraction involved at all, you know, there is a lot that goes on biologically, socially, emotionally, that makes this all really confusing. So I'm going to try to make sense of my thoughts, and then I'm going to open up the phones to see what you have to say. So let's start with the power thing first. You know, yes, if there is any sort of power imbalance in any situation, whether it's academia with professors and students, jobs with employers and employees, in relationships, where there's a stronger partner in the relationship, anywhere that there is an imbalance of power where someone has more control over another, you have a ripe environment for sexual misconduct, for people taking advantage of other people. But if it's just about power imbalances, then we have to pay attention to the idea that power is in the hands of the beholder, that it's not just men in power who behave inappropriately, that if we were to shift everything and shift power and have women be in charge of everything, then we would probably run into a lot of the same problems, because it's not the fact that it's men who are in power, it's the fact that they are in power in a way that entitles them to behave poorly. And so it's interesting, because every time I've had this conversation with friends and kind of brought up this idea that, hey, I think I want to try to have this conversation on the air, the same quote is always used by my friends. And it's the quote from Lord Acton about power and absolute power corrupting people. And this idea that, you know, if anyone finds themselves in a place of ultimate power, they are going to become morally bereft and behave inappropriately. So the power aspect is a huge part of why people behave inappropriately, but it's not the only piece of it. The other piece of our sexual misconducts, our sexual misconduct or our sexual misunderstandings as society, is our social conditioning, how men and women are taught to behave, how they are gender specified to behave and to be accepted in society. So from a woman's perspective, our social conditioning has been traditionally to be more passive, to be pleasant, to be receptive, to be a joy to be around, to be attractive to the opposite sex, to not speak out too much, to basically win the attention of men. It was interesting because one of my friends, as soon as I started talking about this, said, yes, you'll never catch a man if you act that way, which was something her father had said to her over and over again. And so this idea that we have been taught as women from a very long time, for centuries, that there is a passive, soft, demure way that we are to behave to be accepted by men in society has in many ways set us up to be victims, to be in positions where we are victimized because the behavior we've been taught to follow gets us into trouble. And women who haven't behaved that way, who do speak out, who do show their intelligence, who are loud, who feel confident, have been punished for those behaviors. Those same attributes that men utilize to have an edge in business, being outspoken and smart and authoritative and powerful, women are punished for. And so it sets up that imbalance in society, whether it's at work or at home or just out in the general public. The way we are socially conditioned sets women up to be assaulted or abused or harassed. And then the other piece I talked about earlier is our education system. Where is it that our young people are supposed to learn appropriate ways to access intimate relationships, because sexuality is a part of our human being, our biology? We are driven by those hormones that attract us to others. And when we feel those strong feelings of attraction and we don't have any guidelines as to how to address them or express them healthily, then we set ourselves up for getting into trouble. So power, social conditioning, lack of education, and I'm sure there's others. So where do we go from here? What do you think's going on right now? Do you think we're in the midst of another sexual revolution? But this sexual revolution is less about freedom of expression, which was a counter to the lack of freedom during the repression of the 40s, 50s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. And now we've had so much sexual freedom that maybe we're pulling back and there needs to be a whole new reset about our sexual engagement with each other. Do you think it's just bad men behaving badly? Or do you think there's something else? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Hi, Debbie. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi there. I am a mother of three young adult boys, the youngest being a very rather shy 19-year-old. And I know this is not politically correct. I think that the all this movement towards at least talking about these issues is really important. But what I don't see being addressed is the mixed messages that are being brought out by young women, especially, you know, young teenage, young adult women, that these mixed messages that they are sending to the young men, and that that also is a form of power that we're not really exploring, and that these young men, I think that these kids like in your classroom are conflicted. Mm-hmm. I don't think they know what to do anymore. My three boys, all three of them know that when the young woman says no, none of them would push it. But I think it goes beyond that, and I think we need to help them understand what gets to that point. If you invite somebody to your dorm room, and is that going to be, you know, misinterpreted? There's a gradual progression up to when she says no, no is no.
Mm-hmm. Well, Debbie, I'm so glad you called because you've kind of opened a door that I was wanting to go through, but I was hesitating. I've been kind of going back and forth. So I'm going to throw this idea out to you and stay with me, I hope, and let me know what you think.
Okay.
But one of the things that I've really grappled with about this conversation is I have these mixed feelings about those mixed messages that women for centuries know that our sexuality is kryptonite to men, just right? Mm-hmm. That we have that sexual power in a lot of situations, that when someone is attracted to us, it does give us power. And so there are many opportunities in our life when women can utilize their beauty and their attributes, their sexuality, to gain advantages, whether it's getting a drink purchased at a bar or an opportunity at work or, you know, an advancement or some sort of gain in their life.
Exactly.
And so when those things are going well, right, when women have successfully utilized their attributes, their beauty to gain advantages that work well, then that's just considered all's fair in sexual politics. But then it gets ugly, right, when a man makes the advancement or uses his power or, you know, makes a woman feel uncomfortable or trapped or victimized when this advantage turns sour.
Exactly.
And so therein lies a big problem, because I feel like if we don't address the shadow side of women saying, yes, we do use that sexuality to our advantage quite often, and it's all great when it works, and it's awful when it doesn't work, and then we feel ashamed, we feel self-loathing, we feel embarrassed, right? And it sets up this problem, but then we also don't want to take men off the hook of their poor behaviors of being too aggressive sexually. And you can tell in my haltingness that I'm concerned that I don't want to victimize, I don't want to shame any victims. I don't want women to feel embarrassed of their sexuality. But I think unless we own that, because I have to, in all honesty, say that there have been times in my life where I have been sexually harassed, assaulted,
same with me,
put in positions that were uncomfortable, and I felt powerless and ashamed. But there have been many more times that I've utilized my beauty to my advantage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that makes me feel uncomfortable in this whole conversation. Does that make sense?
And that's why as a mother, I've made sure that my sons, of course, understand that when a young woman says no, she means no. And there's really no going back on that. He needs to respect that. But I don't know how to teach them how to interpret these mixed messages.
Well, and I think one of the things I wanted to talk about also was about the education and teaching our children and young adults and adult males and females about how to engage in healthy, intimate relationships. And part of the disconnect is that we're not really sure what it is we want from these relationships, right? Are we just trying to make a friend? Or are we trying to access a sexual partner? Are we trying to find a mate? I think in being clear in what it is we're searching for would help a lot in not getting into situations that are confusing.
And certainly that's very confusing to, shall we say, the 19 to 25-year-old set of of young people, they don't know what they want.
And
well,
part of the reason
young men do.
They part of the reason they don't know what they want from this is also that social message of you shouldn't be thinking about mating or finding a partner because you need to finish college and go to grad school and get a great job and push off any sort of coupling until you're 27 or 30. But if they started feeling these sexual feelings at 14, 15 years old, we need to talk to them about that. What is it that you're looking for? If you're looking for a sexual experience, do we get so bold as to say, I'm attracted to you and I would feel like I'd like to have a sexual experience with you? Is that what we need to teach our children? What kind of comprehensive sexual education?
Yeah, and how unromantic. I mean, you know, that a young woman is not going to respond very well to that if a young man says that.
And there is the other shadowy thing that I started to bring up with my students in class yesterday. And a lot of the men talked about, if I'm too aggressive, then, you know, I'm a beast. But if I'm too soft and too caring and ask her permission or say I'm attracted, then she isn't attracted to me because I'm not manly enough. So the other thing we don't talk about is why are women still attracted to beasts?
Power. That's what I think it's perceived as power.
So where do we move forward if that mixed message comes out? Be manly, but don't be a beast, right? Don't be too soft.
And we wonder why our young men are confused.
And so what has worked for them?
Well, as I say, the youngest is 19, and so he hasn't had a lot of experiences. But they're all three really good boyfriends. They're sensitive to what the females in their lives have communicated. And I think it's communication. I think it's listening and respecting and not being afraid to communicate your feelings. But I do think women in general are attracted to what they perceive as strong and powerful. And maybe, again, it's not politically correct, something that frightens them. It's like the bad boy thing that they don't want to be taken advantage of, but there's something that is intriguing too.
There's that and that kind of biological attraction, because we are driven by something that we aren't in control of, and that is our, you know, our microbiome and our biology that says, I want to find the best genetic match to mate with. And that generally is someone with high testosterone, or if it's a woman, high estrogen. Like, there is that attraction thing that drives us. But there's also the piece of the social conditioning that we're taught from a young age, right? That we're not supposed to speak out and have a mind of our own or be too powerful or be too outspoken because we'll be rejected. And men are said, you need to be powerful and outspoken, even if they don't feel that, because that's what the guys in my class were saying. I'm not naturally super outspoken or aggressive or really strong, and so I don't know where I fit as a man.
Exactly.
And so that social conditioning makes it very confusing.
And I think that's in our education as parents or in the schools or whatever. I don't know where that needs to be taught. It just needs to be a way. It needs to be a daily way of life. And maybe as example by parents, all of the above.
All of the above. And to be able to talk about all of the things we don't want to say that are happening, right?
Yeah.
All of the kind of undercurrent of sexual gamesmanship, which I mentioned before. If we can acknowledge it for what it is, then it is not as insidious. And if we can separate out power imbalances and people in power misusing their power as separate from, you know, the relationships that we try to form. There has to be a delineation. But, Debbie, I appreciate you calling and kicking this off today, because your thoughts are appreciated. And you let me open a door I was afraid to go through. So thanks for calling in.
Well, as I said, it's not politically correct.
It is not.
I figured, what the heck.
Thanks for calling in. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I'm trying to wade into the waters of the sexual misconduct conversation that is kind of taking over our country. Highly placed, powerful men being called out for outrageous behaviors, unacceptable behaviors, and being told that they need to leave their positions or being fired from positions. And it's one section of the story, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the other parts of this story. What drives this behavior besides just the power aspect? How much of that social conditioning puts women in a position of being victimized, of feeling like they don't have a voice, of feeling like they can't say no? The Girl Scouts of America issued a statement encouraging parents to stop telling their young daughters to hug Uncle Charlie or hug your aunt or always have to go in and give someone a kiss or to show affection to them, to stop kind of pushing young girls into situations where they have to hug someone or kiss someone or show affection to someone if they're not initiating that. Because that act into itself, again, can set young women up for being victimized in the future. If they're told from a young age, your job is to make everyone else feel comfortable, your job is to hug and kiss everyone in your family or who your family is close to, that can put young women and young boys in a position where they might not feel comfortable with a relative and not want to hug them, but they're feeling forced to, and that violates a sense of boundaries. And if we're not helping young people understand their boundaries and where they're comfortable, then as they get older, how will they know what their boundaries are? Before they know it, they're in a situation that feels uncomfortable, but they didn't recognize they were going down that path because they had been taught from a young age that their job is to be passive and compliant and to allow other people to, you know, come into their space, invited or not invited. 805-781-3875 is the number to be a part of the conversation. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a moment to take your calls. Hang in there, Rick.
Five long years we have been together. Your love and understanding has brought us through stormy weather. I must admit, girl, I haven't always been good, but you stuck by me just like you said you would. Hey, I know that enough is enough, but you shouldn't be talking about giving it up. Turning loose might be right, it seems. The wrong decision.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We're talking about the wide umbrella of sexual misconduct in our culture. And aside from the outrageous misdoings of corrupt men in power that we have seen in the headlines, what about all of the other pieces of this story of sexual misbehavior that we see throughout our culture on every level, where there's balance imbalances in power, gender imbalances in our communities, and misread signals, unexplained education about how to intimately interact, and conditioning. An interesting fact that I think also goes unspoken about is how people behave when there are imbalances in the numbers between the sexes. And on college campuses where women far outnumber men, many colleges in the South have 70% women and 30% men. It's kind of the wave of the future. Women are going into college at much higher levels than men. But on those campuses where there are 70% women and 30% men, men behave poorly because they can. They're non-committal. They're more promiscuous. They're less apt to, treat a woman well. And on the same token, when there's 70% women and they perceive this small target of marriageable or dateable men, they start to misbehave in ways they wouldn't if there was a gender balance of dateable or mateable partners. And so women drop their bar of who they would find acceptable and start participating in things like hookup culture or drinking to excess or being more promiscuous because they perceive a competition with other women for this small pool of men. So there's all of these sexual politics and activities that go on that also drive our cultural behavior. So what do you think about that? 805-781-3875. Hi, Rick. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. I think in our society, we need to have a way or find a way for experienced men to be able to communicate to young men and kind of guide them.
Yes.
In traditional societies, they had rites of passage, and there were ways of doing this, but somehow that all got lost in industrial society. And for a long time, there really wasn't, sex wasn't really spoken of in public, so there was kind of a silence there. And then in the 60s, it started, you know, people started coming out and really communicating. And I think that there was a lot of progress made back then and since then, and the people who were at the forefront of the progressive side know so much more than is generally spoken of in our society. And the young guys, unfortunately, get a lot of bad messages from watching porn and stuff, and that totally sets them off in the wrong direction.
Right. Who are the mentors for our young men? Yeah. I mean, we hope it's their fathers, but where are their fathers getting their messages of how to behave?
Yeah, and I don't think the fathers are necessarily the best source, because I think young men tend to pay more attention to other men that they come in contact with than their parents. I mean, non-parental figures, but authority. I mean, it seems to me that there's a lack of any real authority figures in this respect. Do you have any ideas for how, say, people like myself could communicate, like, to young college guys? I don't necessarily think it needs to be in a mixed group. I think some things men can communicate to other men, because men need to know really a lot more about how to be with women.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and there's a lot to know.
Well, and you bring up a really interesting point, because now you're talking about coming of age ceremonies and how do we help young men and women transition from adolescence into adulthood, and how do they learn those skills of what it is to be a citizen and to be a husband and a lover and a friend. And we don't have a mechanism in our society. In many ways, the hopes is that a comprehensive sex education program, a whole life program all the way through junior high through high school, would be a way of helping to, you know, educate and prepare young men and young women for their roles as adults.
Yeah.
I know at Cal Poly, one of my students that was in the conversation yesterday, he's very active in a masculinity group that they've created, groups and dialogues on campus for men to come together and talk about what it is to be a man. So there are things that are happening. The question always is, how do we take what's happening in 10% of our population and translate that out to the 90% of our population who don't have access to other stories, right, that aren't listening to NPR or going to college or having coming of age ceremonies, that are getting their messages from the media or from porn or from, as you talked about, those authority figures, those role models. You know, we clearly don't have any adults in place anywhere that people can look up to and respect. In some ways, our media has created this ability to tear down and destroy any hero that might exist. And in many ways, I don't think anyone who is truly heroic would want to be in the public eye, because they would just be torn down.
Yeah.
So we're left with the bad behavior.
There are also people who write these sex advice columns. I mean, there are a few. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't read them. But the few times that I have read any, it seems that a lot of times they're really aimed at sensationalizing. Well, to me, it's sort of sensationalist sexuality. It's not really, you know, focused on love and really knowing how to, well, for example, men in our society aren't really taught how to properly stimulate and connect with women.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a long time to learn these things, and by the time you learn them, you know, you're either in a marriage situation or old or whatnot, but you're not usually in contact with young men.
No, and it's interesting, because one of the evolutionary ideas of why orgasm is what it is, and why women have a more complex orgasmic response, is because if a man takes the time to pleasure a woman to that degree, then he generally is going to be a more nurturing partner and father to his children. And so there is this evolutionary belief about why it's complex, because our society doesn't reward patience and intimacy. And so you bring up some great points, and I think it's worth more shows and more conversations. But I also think that the parts that don't go addressed are the things I really still want to talk about is what about the messages that young women or women in general are sending to men about, you know, where they fit in their lives or utilizing their sexuality to gain advantage. And then when men take advantage of it, they tend to be the ones that suffer.
Yeah. Well, I think that a lot of young women don't know what to expect from young men because, you know, again, the media and everything portrays masculinity in certain ways that is not all that realistic.
Yeah. It's a good conversation, Rick. We'll have to go further with this. Thank you for calling in. I think I dropped you. I'm sorry about that. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Alex. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Hey. Hey. Listening to beginning of what you had said, and I've never heard your radio station before. It really caught my interest because I've been reading the Canterbury Tales by Chaucer, mm-hmm. and talking about women using their sexualism to get what they want, and their confusion between using it and then being abused for it at the same time. It really reminded me of the Wife of Bath, because the character is basically a prostitute who has had many husbands and who has basically went her whole life being used and kind of learning to use her sexualism control her husband. And so she's got this almost perverse sense of what she's supposed to be, and she uses Bible scriptures in a way that's ironic, and she kind of uses it to justify the way that she acts. But I think that an important part of her story is when she talks about this knight who ends up raping a woman because of how beautiful she was. So he's forced to go on this crusade to kind of vindicate himself and earn his life from Camelot. And I think that if we look at that story as a society and kind of allow children and classrooms to talk about this story, that we could really learn a lot from each other and kind of build a dialogue where we can talk about things like sexualism and feminism and the way people should be treated. I think the story is really good because it shows that, like you said before, there's a long history of women being expected to act a certain way. And there's actually, I think, a lot of stories and a lot of input from people that we can use to kind of talk about this. And I think it's just a little bit about having the cojones to really bring it up, because I think in a lot of classrooms, everyone is so uninvolved and so worried about standards and testing that we don't take the time to talk about social issues.
Alex, I appreciate that. And I haven't read Canterbury Tales, but now I need to, because you just made me realize how limited my source of information is. But you also remind me that part of the reason I love my work in depth psychology is because it draws on ancient texts and mythology to teach and express kind of the tales of how to live, that we've through centuries had this information, these stories of how people have been taught to behave or responded and how they behave. And what seems to have happened that in our culture, this breadth of stories have been narrowed down to only teaching our children the stories that continue to, keep men in power and keep women submissive. You know, we just teach our children those stories and those fables and those myths and the great literature that continues the same story of men being in power.
I agree with you very much. I do think that there's been control.
I'm sorry that Alex's line isn't better. Alex, can you give us a call back? I'm sorry, because for whatever reason, your line isn't clear, and I want to be able to hear what you have to say. Because I appreciate this idea, too, that this way of interacting between men and women, although it's been this way for centuries, is not necessarily because our biology tells us so. But in a lot of ways, it's our social conditioning. It's how women have been kind of forced to behave in society, and the way men have been taught to behave in society has set up these imbalances. And that if women utilize their sexuality to gain advantage or to gain attention or to gain attraction, it is because that has been one of the few places that women have been able to have any power, that they haven't had the encouragement to speak out, to be outspoken, to use their intelligence, to use their wisdom. And when they have, it has backfired. It has caused women harm throughout all of history. All right, let's try Alex again. Is this a better line?
I think so. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I hear you much better. Okay, Alex, so finish your thought for me.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I don't think any woman should ever feel guilty for using what she has, you know, to her advantage. And I think it all comes down to, you know, their own personal story, and everybody's able to and should be able to use the advantages that they were given. And I don't think any woman should have to feel guilty that she's beautiful and that she can, you know, convince people to do what she wants. And as far as men go, I think that everyone that you've talked to so far and you have a good understanding that, you know, we just need to teach men to be better men. Mm-hmm. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for calling in, Alex. I appreciate it. As I said in the introduction, it's really not a woman's issue or a man's issue. It is our issue as humans. And as long as we try to separate out who needs to do better, who needs to behave differently, then it divides us. Like, how do we come together and recognize the complexities of human interactions, human relationships? Because there is that sexual, biological drive of attraction that we have towards each other, and how do we find healthy ways to express that? And then there is the power piece when it comes to the economy or politics or academia or any place where that you have a leader and a student or an employer and employee. How do we create an atmosphere where everyone feels valued? And one of the things that's interesting is that studies have shown that if you have 25% of those positions of power in academia or in politics or in corporations, if 25% of the power positions are held by women, it balances the behaviors or the atmosphere, the culture within that environment. We're not anywhere close to 25% right now, but it's interesting because you would think it would take 50% to balance, but it's not. It's really 25% of those positions. So that's why it's so important for women to run for office. If we can get up to 25%, it inherently takes care of that imbalance of power. And the other statistic that I found really interesting is that a group of scientists in 2011 at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute discovered this 10% rule, that when 10% of the population holds an unshakable belief about something, their belief will be adopted by the majority of society. Just 10%. Now think about the possibilities of that. Think about the negative possibilities, because if you have 10% of the population unshakably believing something that's negative, that shapes the whole force of society. But how can we utilize that 10% rule to the betterment of society? If 10% of our population can hold an unshakable belief, that belief in itself will be adopted by the majority of our society. And the other piece I want to throw out there is, in order to address sexual misconduct, sexual misbehavior, we have to understand what it is we're most upset and outraged about. What is it that's driving our anger? Is it the unwanted sexual advances that are happening? Is it the power imbalances that occur that cause sexual misbehavior? Is it the injustice that it's happening at all? Is it our sense of care and concern for the trauma and the lifelong repercussions that follow the victims of sexual assault? Are we just angry because it's a reminder that life isn't fair, that it's inherently unfair, and that those who are rich are powerful, and that the powerful quite often are above the law? Are we angry because beauty is a power too, and those that have beauty have advantages and power? Are we feeling angry at this moment, at this time, because every half century or so we go through this rebellion against corruption as a people, as a populace? We rise up and stand up and speak out and get angry about injustices across the board, and then we just kind of retreat once again when we realize that life isn't fair and that power will ultimately win? Because if we don't know what it is we're angry about, then I don't know how we can fix it. I don't know how we can improve what's broken if we don't know what it is. And if we can't identify what it is we're most angry about right now, then we can't accept what is or change what must be changed and move forward. And I think that's why we're struggling right now, because it's a behemoth of experiences that are being thrown out at us, and I'm not sure we can identify what exactly it is we're most angry about, but maybe you can, and I'd like to know. 805-781-3875 is a number to be part of the conversation. What runs through your mind when you see what's happening in our culture? When you read about the misdeeds of powerful men utilizing their position to mistreat others? What are your feelings about what's happening culturally? I don't want to vilify men. I love the men in my life. They're good men. They make great choices. They respect women and themselves. They don't abuse power. I don't want the young men in my life to feel like they're inherently bad because they are men in power and privilege. And I don't want young women to continue feeling like they must be just right to be acceptable, that they have to look just right or act just right, don't want to be too loud, don't want to be too aggressive, don't want to be too smart. All of those things that hinder women from really embracing who they are. And how do we create a place where everyone can feel heard or accepted for who they are? Is that even possible? Is that even possible with the nature of man? Is the nature of man such that if we can oppress others, we will? Is the nature of man that if we can have power, why would we hand our power over to someone else? 805-781-3875. Hi, Riley, you're on the air.
Is that even possible with the nature of man?
Can you turn down your radio, Riley?
If we can oppress others, we will.
Riley, are you there?
Hello?
Hi, can you turn down your radio, please?
Okay, I'm going to try.
All righty. I can't
get it.
Can you turn down your radio, Riley?
Yes.
All right. Riley, are you there?
Yeah.
Hello?
Hi. If you can turn down your radio and give me a call back, that would be helpful, okay? All right, let's try Renee. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just wanted to answer your question. I think it's difficult for women to accept that kind of advances, because it's like somebody's trying to take something from you that you didn't offer and was never asked.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, there are some people who have had that experience as children, and what it does is remind. It's a memory, it's a trigger for a lot of women that they've already been abused in the past. And then when someone comes and makes some sort of advance, it triggers old things. And that's why we get angry.
Renee, I appreciate that, because I have been reading a lot of literature about wives who have been triggered by the current presidency and the sexual abuse allegations that go unanswered, and mm-hmm. that for women who were abused when they were young or assaulted are having troubles with their own marriages because they're feeling triggered and not trusting of their husbands and causing a lot of strife in their lives.
Yeah, it ruins marriages unless you have a man that's totally compassionate and can put you ahead of himself, and that's just that doesn't happen very often.
And I think that that's one of the big struggles in the conversation, is that we don't want to ever have women feel ashamed or victimized, right? Or to shame the victims. And at the same time, we have to help society address how we interact with each other.
Yeah. But, you know, we're starting now at this late age to open it up and see it for what it is, to shine some light on it.
We are trying. We
are
trying.
It gets swept under the carpet just way too easy.
It does. Renee, thank you for calling in.
Sure.
So I think we're going to leave it with there, with these thoughts. And I hope that you'll continue these conversations with your family, with your children, with your friends. Talk about power and social conditioning and education. How can we do differently in all of these areas? And think about, what is it that's causing you to be angry? Because when you can identify it, you can take action. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find me on my Facebook page or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. As always, I appreciate you being part of the conversation. I look forward to continuing next Tuesday at 2.
A man who can't walk on.